Today's edition of the Between the Ropes podcast is brought to you by Suplex Apparel, pro wrestling focused clothing for wrestlers and fans. Find them online at suplexapparel.com. You're going to find something that you love. They've got the winter range out there right now, jackets, hoodies, hats, rucksacks, and more for men and for women, plus a wide array of t-shirts, not only with the Suplex Apparel brand, but also with the brand of the team of professional wrestlers that they work with. Guys like Ring of Honor champion Kyle O'Reilly, former ROH champion Adam Cole, Zack Sabre Jr., Prince Devitt, and Helico, and others. You're going to find some great-looking gear that you're going to love. And it's the holiday season, so it's the perfect time to get some gifts at Suplex Apparel for your friends, for your loved ones, for the wrestling fans in your life, and you can get some for yourself. Plus, they ship worldwide. Right now is the time to get it. Like I said, don't waste any more time, especially if you want to get some great-looking gear from Suplex Apparel in time for the holiday season. Become part of the Suplex Apparel team. Check them out online at suplexapparel.com. And a quick reminder to everybody, please support Between the Ropes on Patreon. Help keep us going and contribute today. Doesn't matter how little, even a dollar a month goes a long way in helping us out. Go to patreon.com/betweentheropes and you can support this brand, this podcast, to help us keep going. Like I said, even a dollar a month goes a long, long way in helping us keep doing what we do. Please support us on Patreon. It's patreon.com/betweentheropes. Joining me as always, Michael Wiseman.
Hey, that's me. I'm Michael Wiseman.
And wait, we're taping this a little bit earlier than normal. So I'm wondering, because normally you hold off your drinking until at night, but are you already drinking at this hour of the day?
I'm sorry. You said I hold off on my drinking until the night. I just crack open more bottles into the evening.
Is that how it works?
Yeah. So, you know,
it's just wine during the day and booze at night.
Well, liquor. I mean, it's normally just liquor during the day and vodka at night.
Ah.
Rubbing alcohol if I can't get my hands onto anything.
Like vanilla extract, like Tom Hanks when he appeared on a couple editions of, what show was that? Family Ties. And he was the alcoholic and he broke into the cabinet and he found like vanilla extract and it had like some alcohol in it.
I can't help it. I'm sick. I can't help it. Oh, what have I done?
Oh, that makes me sad, though. We just had a Hollywood passing. You're talking about classics.
Oh, man. Alan Thicke. Oh.
God.
I loved him. I mean, there's so many different shows that he was on, but, I mean, he would make cameos on various shows. He used to make regular cameos on How I Met Your Mother.
How I Met Your Mother, yes.
Which was fantastic. And, I mean, and he wasn't even a character. He was Alan Thicke. And he was, you know, Canada's treasure, basically. And it was fantastic the way they used him. I did not know that Alan Thicke wrote all these different theme songs for TV shows.
Right? That's crazy.
Like, he's the guy responsible for the theme songs to Different Strokes and The Facts of Life.
Uh-huh. When I heard that, I was like, wait, that made me think of Charlie's character from that terrible sitcom, Two and a Half Men. But
do you think that he wrote the Beaver song on How I Met Your Mother?
Did he write any of the songs on How I Met Your Mother?
Probably not, but I'd like to think he wrote the Beaver song.
Oh, wait. This is probably, wait, when did he pass away? It's been less than 24 hours, right?
Yeah.
Because his last tweet yesterday was season 2, Fuller House looking good. I even like the ones I'm not in. Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, he tweeted that like a few hours before he passed away. He was playing hockey and had a heart attack.
Yeah, with his son. That's sad.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was really okay. So, kick this off in a day. You know what this means? This means they need to drink more. So here we go. All
yeah. Right.
Wait, what am I drinking, Brian?
What are you drinking?
Sweetwater Take Two Pilsner. I found it at the back of my beer fridge. Pretty sure it's at a date, but, you know, alcohol stays good forever, so whatever.
I was going to say, it's like frozen or something?
Nope. But it was in there. July. Went out of date in July, so it's going to be good. Cheers. Just popped it open. You missed the sound because we were talking, but
yeah,
it's cool.
I heard it.
You heard it.
Enjoy the frosty.
Listen to this. that was radio friendly, right?
Oh. Up close and personal. Everybody head down Michael Wiseman's throat.
Oh, it was nice. Just see the visual, right? Just see it.
That's good. That's good. How did you like the visual of John Cena on Saturday Night Live?
I was very impressed. This was his chance, right? He was in a bigger audience than he's been in front of. He's been in movies and stuff, but he owned this, you know, and I thought he did a great job. I really enjoyed it.
I did too. I wish that they had a little bit of better material for him, but mm-hmm. he did the best with what he had.
The writing was rather lackluster Saturday night, I felt like.
I think we have differing opinions on the best skit. So which one did you like the most?
His opening was great, where everybody was challenging him to matches, and I really enjoyed that, but I thought he was great as Gronk. It cracked me up. The Red Solo Cup line, they played way too many times on WWE this week, but just he played, you know, actually I take that back. You know what the best skit he was in was the Alabama football skit where he played the football player who was presenting his science fair project, and it was just a banana. I thought that was pretty good.
What's the outside of it called? A shell.
Yeah.
No, the crust. Girl, he called correct. It the crust.
The crust. He's like, oh, the crust. They were all like, you're correct. You can play. Yep. So yeah. I thought that was a pretty good one. You liked the
Naughty Bookstore. I thought that was really good.
Yeah. I wish he had better material, because none of his segments really, you know, when The Rock went on there the first time, or when he went back and he played The Rock Obama, which is a classic, I didn't feel like John Cena had any real classic segments, but I did like that they kept it to just John Cena and that he did a really good job. I've been one of the ones who said John Cena is not The Rock. He's not even the biggest star, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. I think Homeboy's got some potential, got some chops moving forward.
He does, and he's going to have some great opportunities.
His timing was fantastic on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. You can tell nothing shakes him. Nothing yes. shakes that dude. By the way, the best segment on the entire show. Well, there's two. I thought number one, Walter White came knocking in the opening segment for yes. Breaking Bad fans. And then also, I can't remember the character's name, but when they do Weekend Update,
wait, you forgot Walter White was nominated to be what? Trump nominated Walter White to be the DA, head of
the DA. I like his style.
He was like, I feel like I like this site. I've heard we might build a wall. I think that's great. It's going to be great to keep our product here in the States.
Right. He goes, we're going to keep this red, white, and a whole lot of blue. Between that and the Weekend Update, and I can't remember the character's name, but it's like a recurring character where they have like the former crack addict woman come out there.
His neighbor.
Yeah, talks to
like
the
my
list.
Neighbor. Yeah.
The woman that does the character, she's fantastic. And she doesn't break stride, but Michael Che is next to her. And that dude started laughing about five times. He could not help himself.
Oh, man.
I can't blame him either. That's fantastic stuff.
She plays it so well. She gets in a character and just, she's unmovable, right?
Oh,
she,
I know, right? She's really good. I've seen her do it before. I don't watch Saturday Night Live all the time. No. Like I'll pick and choose like some different things. Like the day after I'll watch him online. But she's really good when she does that character.
Yeah.
I can't believe they brought back Walter White, man. It had Breaking Bad on there, man, with Cranston. And then Cranston was there at the end, the final credits.
I mean, this is continuity, right? He said he faked his own death. So I feel like Walter White must still be alive in the world of Breaking Bad. So
I guess he is. I guess we're going to get some more Breaking Bad. And then who knows? Maybe he'll pop up on some Better Call Saul as well. Which is coming back in the spring.
I've been very disappointed with the writing of Saturday Night Live this year. I felt like it's taken a step back outside of, the Alec Baldwin Trump sketches. However, I thought that for once, and this will be the kind of the final part of our Cheap Pop segment of the week, I thought The Walking Dead did a great job recovering this past Sunday night.
Oh, I agree. And I can't wait for the second half of the season. I know you've been down. And you know what the funny thing is the people that don't watch the show that maybe have watched in the past or just are not interested right now is because they say there's no hope on the show. It's all gloom and doom.
Oh.
And this season has really been gloomy and doomy, especially the opening episode, which was shocking because they killed, you know, two characters, including one major character.
I mean, you spoiled it last week.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Sorry, Glenn. trust me, man. That's like emblazoned in my mind now with his eyeball popping out. The way that they did it this week where they had like this little reunion and you're like, all right, strap up. It's fighting time come the second half of the season, which now we have to wait until, you know, the week after the Super Bowl in February to start watching. But, yeah, I really like where they took it.
they brought it back from what had been, I think, a lackluster season, kind of boring, kind of, I don't know, what are we going to do here? It just seemed like aimless. And so I was really excited to see them pick back up the momentum and give our characters a chance to kind of fight another day. So I thought it was good. I'm excited to see where they go. I think 16 episodes is too long for that show for a season. I think they could benefit from moving down to 13 or maybe even doing a 10 episode season like Game of Thrones, and just keeping that pace up throughout the entire 10 or 13 episodes.
Yeah. I mean, what do they do right now again? 16? Is that what it is?
16. Yeah. Two seasons of 8. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this show is not going to end anytime soon either. I mean,
nope.
I know that they have talked about AMC being them, because they do Fear the Walking Dead as well. They have talked about keeping some form of a Walking Dead show going for like 20 years.
Oh, wow.
Like they, and that's from the beginning when The Walking Dead began. And I'm not saying it would be The Walking Dead for 20 years, but I'm just saying that there would be some kind of Walking Dead show on 20 years from when Walking Dead began.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. So they've, and AMC is like, yeah, man, we love this. You know, we want you to keep doing this because the ratings are so high. Even Fear the Walking Dead doesn't get the ratings of The Walking Dead, but it's better than most shows.
Right.
So.
Well, the ratings are better. I don't know if the show is better.
Right. Yeah. The ratings are definitely better. Yeah. The show is, show's okay. Can't match up to the first one. The original is always the best.
I haven't watched anything since the first season, so I can't comment too much. But anyway.
Second season was better. I will say that.
Okay.
It was better.
I'll watch it sometime when I'm not busy catching up on the WWE Network.
Yes. So we were talking about this before we started. So both of us have found ourselves watching various things on the network, including you, because what have you been doing lately on the network?
So I basically went back and said, you know what? I'm going to relive the glory days of pro wrestling. I really wanted a basis to kind of shine some of the way wrestling is booked now and the criticisms that people have about it not being as good as it was back in the day, X, Y, and Z. So I wanted to kind of reformulate my opinion of what made the Attitude Era work. We've seen it in these series they did, the whole Monday Night War series, which was fantastic. And you've seen clips of it over the years and probably matches here or there. But I said, yeah, but as a whole, the Attitude Era had an energy about it. Why was wrestling quote unquote better back then? So I said, let me go back and just start watching it from the beginning and figure it out. So I went back to before the Attitude Era started, SummerSlam of 97. And I've literally just been working my way through it week by week, pay-per-views and Monday Night Raws. I think I'm gonna start throwing in some Nitros now as well. And just watching them, just have them on in the background while I'm doing some other stuff, catch some of the talky segments, things like that. And Brian, I'm going to be honest with you. So right now, I just made it through the Montreal Screwjob, made it through Survivor Series.
Okay.
I'm coming out of that. It's not as good as you remember it being. None of it is.
Well, I'm sure. I'm sure.
The tag team division is terrible. We have the Headbangers going up against Godwin, the Godwins, right, which is awful, awful, awful. Road Dogg and Billy Gunn have just kind of made their debut. They don't even have music yet. And a lot of the talking segments are weird and awkward. The booking is strange in a lot of ways. Like Steve Blackman is portrayed as being this fan who, I forgot this, jumps over the rail and inserts himself into a match at Survivor Series. And Ken Shamrock is being portrayed as the end-all, be-all future world champion to carry us into the next generation. Also, they use Kurt Angle's theme music a lot way before he gets there. Metals, as it's called. So it's interesting, but Attitude Era is not showing as well 20 years later.
That's the way it always is. We're so much fonder of things from the past when you remember it. And like then you go back and you watch and you're like, you know what? Maybe there weren't. It wasn't as great as I once thought. I mean, there definitely are some things. It's just you always remember things from your youth a lot more fonder.
Yes. And there are some great things like, I mean, Owen Hart's all over the place and rest in peace. He is awesome, of course. And Stone Cold Steve Austin seeing the genesis of this character before he's even the world champion, knowing that's coming, is pretty cool. I think they did something really well back in the Attitude Era. Of course, first off, Monday Night Raws are only 2 hours, which helps.
Right.
But they did something really well back in the Attitude Era that SmackDown has picked up on as far as a book from a booking standpoint. And that is they had more title matches. Now, that you can take that to an extreme and have too many title changes, X, Y, and Z. But what they did was they will book, like, for example, Ken Shamrock was fighting Bret Hart for the WWF Championship. Ended in a no contest. Title did not change hands. But they built themselves some matches that they could talk about on the air and get you to tune back in next week for that were meaningful. So you're not just watching, you know, these kind of in between, like, why am I watching these two guys fight for the 15th time? Why am I watching Baron Corbin fight Kalisto for the 15th time, right? They're building in some feuds and matches that get you to tune back in. And SmackDown's been doing more of that. Let's advertise title matches. And now Raw's doing it too, which I think is really cool. Meaningful booking. But way too many no finishes, way too many interferences. So that kind of takes away from all the end. Goldust is really weird right now. It's just an awkward thing.
It's funny you say that because I don't do it that often, but every now and then I will go down the well and I will like pick up on something. And now that WWE has, I think they've got all of the Attitude Era editions of Raw on there now.
Yeah.
But a couple of weeks ago, I was checking that out and I was like, oh, cool, man. They've got all these different matches or all these different shows from different years. And there was a one match in particular I wanted to go hunt out and I found it. And it was like the April 23rd edition, 2017 edition of Raw. And it was
right in the middle of the ruthless aggression era. As
absolutely.
It was the
WrestleMania rematch between John Cena and Shawn Michaels.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And they had like this 55 minute match on Raw, which is crazy to think about now, considering that Raw was still only 2 hours and half of the show was one match.
Wow.
And this is like this incredible match that they had. It was so awesome. Huh. And I had been waiting for them to put that on there. And I remember checking even like, you know, 6 months ago, and they still didn't have, you know, that year for Raw up. But now they've got it, and I watched it, and it's awesome. I think that's the date. It's like April 23rd, 2007. It's a couple weeks after the WrestleMania match, but go out of your way to watch that. And then, by the way, I love this too. So like on Facebook now, people have been posting different things from like, remember this, remember the time that this happened, and they'll have like this video clip on Facebook, you know, and it'll be like the time Steve Austin beat up everybody, and it was the time that he literally like hit the building, and it was like WWF at the time was fighting ECW and WCW guys, and Austin pulled up in a truck, and he pulled out a crowbar, and he started beating the crap out of guys in the back. I think he beat up like Shane Helms and Sean Stasiak in the back. And then he came to the ring, no weapon, and like beat the hell out of everybody. And like everybody ate a stunner. And then there was another one. Somebody had the clip of when Jim Ross just lost his mind because Triple H turned on Stone Cold and like, JR was screaming. He's like, why? God damn it. Why, you son of a bitch? You know, and just you name it, man. He was every name in the book. And like those clips have been showing up on Facebook, which is, it's just like, hey, remember when this happened during your childhood or during the Attitude Era or whatever, which is funny to look at now. And there definitely is selective things because there are some stuff that were fantastic, that were awesome. But there definitely are some times you go back and you look and you're like, not everything was great, man.
Right. Well, then that era definitely holds up better in like that scenario where you're watching clips on Twitter or on YouTube or Facebook. I mean, it does the way I'm doing it, which is literally watching every show from beginning to end, because some of the wrestling, especially through that era, is not. We had some good segments, but the wrestling and the matches are not always that great. Even the matches people remember, Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels at Survivor Series, the Montreal Screwjob, was just a whole lot of brawling.
It was a street fight. It was an absolute street fight.
And it wasn't like, oh, that was a great match. It was just an interest, you know, it just wasn't what we consider great matches now. So I think it's really curious how wrestling, professional wrestling, has changed into this more dynamic art form than it was during this era. And even where it was in the 80s and 70s, where it was a lot more grappling, there's so much more of an art to it nowadays. Crispness, because, God, there are some sloppy wrestlers being tossed about in the ring in the WWF in the mid-90s. And it's so crisp now in the ring. And if you mess up, it's so much more obvious, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing I'd say now is, like, I'm okay with guys making little mistakes here and there because I think it makes it look more real. But
yes,
like you can see like the glaring stuff, but the wrestling nowadays, WWE and everywhere else, is so incredible. Like there's so much good wrestling in so many different places.
Yes. You would be hard. Some of those guys that were successful back in the day would have no chance in hell of surviving nowadays.
Hey, somebody should turn that into a theme song.
Yeah, I could. Yes, I got you. No chance. No chance in hell. There you go.
I want to talk about a couple of pieces from Vice Sports. So Vice Sports has done a couple of long form pieces this week when it comes to wrestling. The first one was on the business of WWE called Breaking Kayfabe, an inside look at WWE's unlikely business empire, done by Ian Frisch, who joined me on the podcast during the week. So if you haven't had an opportunity to listen to it, I would encourage you to go back and listen. Not Fritz, but Frisch. We had a nice hour chat about his conversation or about his piece, talking about the business of WWE. And there was nothing really new about it per se. Maybe to the average fan there was, but to people that follow it really closely like us, there really wasn't. But it's still a very interesting read. But there was one really juicy piece of news that came out of this, and that in 2012, Shane McMahon tried to rejoin the company and he wanted to take over the creative department. And he made a pitch with Vince and he brought in an author as well who had his own content creation company. And
it was the guy who wrote, if you're familiar with the guy who wrote A Million Little Pieces, which was originally thought to be this great work that Oprah promoted, and they found out so much of it was fake.
Right.
I forget his name, but yeah, that's the author.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. For some reason, I can't remember off the top of my head either. But yeah, so he had this plan, and he made the pitch to Vince, like, can we have a meeting? And Vince took the meeting. And according to the story, both Stephanie and Triple H were aghast, shall we say. And in the end, of course, Vince turned down Shane's offer, but he actually did try to come back years earlier. And
it was 2009, I think, is whenever he made that move.
2012.
Okay.
Gotcha. 2012. He tried and it just didn't happen. Is the guy's name James Frey? Does that sound right?
Yes. James Frey.
So he tried to do that. So that was the biggest piece of news that came out of this. And there was also talk about the WWE Network and the business of jumping into that. So it was in depth. It's over 8,000 words. So give yourself some time to read it. But it's really, really interesting. And like I said, listen to the podcast with Ian and myself from earlier in the week. But it's just an interesting look at the business of WWE. And you have to wonder how things would be different if Shane had gotten his way. Because there's a lot of people that will always say Shane is a very, very good guy. He's always been great to work with, but he had bad ideas when it came to WWE booking.
Really?
Yes.
I never heard that.
That's been the reputation from Shane. Like, great guy, but when it comes to the creative part, his ideas, he has some doozies.
Well, and this article also said, you know, Stephanie was head over creative for a short while, and it went on to talk about how that was never really the original intent, that was kind of a name only title that was given to her, not necessarily played to her strengths. It just kind of happened that way where she fell into that role.
And it was really like a position where she did nothing too. She was like a conduit between the creative team and Vince.
Right. Which is also why it would have been even a much bigger deal had Shane come in and kind of taken over creative and removed that barrier for Stephanie. So fascinating dynamic there. I thought the whole conversation about Vince McMahon not running people out of town, but kind of having it be his way or the highway, while not surprising, was somewhat interesting. And the conversation around how there really is this three-man power ring between Triple H, Vince, and Stephanie, that they kind of just run everything the way they do it. You know, I thought all that was pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, and they talk about how Vince, like, somebody will be there for 20 years, and then one day you'll come in and like your services are no longer needed, which did happen. It just happened to a couple employees. So it's one of those things where they read the tea leaves kind of thing, and they just feel like it's time to go in a different direction for whatever reason. You don't always get an explanation for good or for bad. Vince has made this company a success because of his business practices, because the way that he has done things. The question is, with the change in times, has Vince changed enough with it because he continues to micromanage the company like he always has. And the question is he doing that too much? And is he trying to grow too fast, you know, in today's, you know, media climate?
Well, and the article points out how the WWE Network has been a huge gamble and not necessarily a huge success in the same way, and how it's caused them to lose some money and profits. But I thought the point the author brought out about how Vince McMahon still runs WWE like a regional promotion, I thought that was super interesting because, you know, you can see it in the way television is booked. They change their mind sometimes. They go in this direction, and then now they're going to do this other thing with this guy now. And this guy said, he pointed that out. And he said, there are a lot of the things we talked about, push pulls, right? We're going to push you for a little bit, then stop. And he said part of that's due to Vince McMahon's just kind of willy-nilliness about how they he said sources close to Vince McMahon told him, the author, that a lot of that's due to Vince McMahon's kind of indecisiveness and just I'm not going to say flippant attitude about it, but, you know, whimsical attitude about who gets pushed and who doesn't and however it hits him.
Right. And it's an interesting dynamic, you know, from the top of the company to the bottom. And it's ruled with an iron fist. I mean, I'm not saying that Vince is mean to everybody, but there's just a certain way he's always run the company and he continues to do it. And there could be some questions about that concerning the way that, you know, the company has changed. It's not a regional company anymore. It's not a privately owned company. It's a publicly traded company. And just how in depth and how many layers they are, how they're an entertainment conglomerate now, and just can they keep up with the change of the times, you know, both inside closed doors and what they actually give to consumers.
Right. And professional wrestling, like you've said numerous times in the past, it's less true now, but there's a stigma about professional wrestling, right? It's not the same as any other entertainment entity. So they still run into that struggle. They are a lot more mainstream and a lot more accepted than they were 15, 16 years ago, but you still have those issues. I wonder, I saw something come up about this because there's a documentary coming out soon on ESPN about it, but I wonder what the reception would be now if Vince McMahon tried to create an XFL. Because back in 2000, when this happened, the whole thing was, well, is it staged? Because professional wrestling is fake and staged. And professional wrestling is so much more pop culture now that I wonder if it could drop some of that stigma that it didn't drop back in 2000.
Hey, I'll tell the story again about I was there and talked to Vince the day that they introduced the XFL team here in Orlando. And I decided to wait to, they were doing one-on-one interviews with Vince, and I decided to go last. And the person in front of me at the time worked for the newspaper, worked for the Orlando Sentinel. And she was extremely skeptical about this football league. And she was pressing Vince on it. And he was getting ticked about, oh, this fake league, and how can we, you know, believe that this league is going to be real, that it's not going to be like your wrestling and how fake that is. And Vince was getting ticked. He was really getting ticked. And he was trying to say, no, this is going to be real football. It's not fixed. We're trying to make it hard-nosed football the way that I liked it when we grew up, but it's not going to be, you know, scripted like my wrestling. He's not going to use the word fake. But I just remember them not yelling at each other, but the conversation got rather boisterous. And Vince proclaiming to her, what we do is Americana. It's Americana, you know? And yeah. You know,
well,
I mean, he's going to defend his brand. So I totally get that. And I mean, for the failures of the XFL, I mean, there was nothing fixed about it. Where it went awry was stars that people didn't know. And then trying to integrate storylines with guys with cheerleaders and different things like that. And
I mean, locker room cheerleader scene. Right?
Yeah. Things like, I mean, I remember going to that first game and it was such a wild scene here in Orlando, at the Citrus Bowl where WrestleMania is going to be this year. And it was such a wild scene. I mean, that game was sold out. They ran out of beer in the third quarter. They had cheerleaders, not even on the field. They had cheerleaders on the riser, like right there within arm's reach of fans. And I mean, scantily clad would be one way to put it, the way they were dressed. And just how wild of a scene it was, like overall. And like, you know, I during the game, like I met D'Lo Brown and Billy Gunn and Jonathan Coachman on the sideline. And after the game, I talked with Jim Ross, who actually called the game, as the whole thing was just surreal. And it like went from like, and there was other places too, where it was like, it was packed. And then the next thing you know, like the following week, it was like, this is already losing its luster. And that's just the way that it was. And I mean, I think it would probably be about the same thing now. I don't know if it would do any better or not. And I think they'd be a lot more reserved about trying to go forward with that idea now than they would have then.
Well, and you also have the issue, too. You said this was supposed to be a little bit more Smash Mouth, right? Vince wanted to be rough and tumble with what he grew up with. You can't get away with that in today's sports climate, with concussions being what they are and injuries and player safety being such a high priority. You couldn't do this kind of a Wild West football league anymore. You couldn't make your NFL blitz because people are concerned about the health and well-being of our players. But I think what you said there about how Vince's quote, "This is Americana," that's his mentality. He has this kind of vague notion of what America is, of what pro wrestling is in regards to that. And I think that article from Vice really hit on, you know, that's not always what professional wrestling is or needs to be. Professional wrestling is not this late 80s kind of idealized form of heroes and bad guys. It's not Roman Reigns. It's not Hulk Hogan anymore. There's nuance to the sport and to the business now that you can't ignore. And Vince McMahon tends to ignore that too much these days.
I'm going to be very curious, and we could talk a lot about this more when that documentary does come out on ESPN. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be very curious about what the WWE reaction is to that piece.
Oh, okay.
Because I'll give a little behind the scenes. I don't think I'm doing anything wrong here by giving this away. But, you know, earlier this year, when WWE had the press conference of WrestleMania coming to Orlando, you know, next year. So I got to do a sit down with Vince McMahon. And when I was walking with Vince and the PR guy, and we were going into a separate building to sit down to have the conversation, the PR guy goes, "Hey, Vince, Brian talked to you years ago when the XFL came to town." And Vince was like, "Oh." He like rolled his eyes kind of reaction. And I mean, that tells you a lot right there. Like, oh, geez, the XFL. You know, like, I mean, because what did they lose? Like $50, $70 million, something like that off of it. So it was a lot of money. It was a lot of money. I mean, it was at least one Linda McMahon senatorial run, if not, you know, close to two.
Way to put that into context.
Let me bring up this other story that Vice did. Okay. And this one just came out today and we're taping this on Wednesday. But they did one on the Young Bucks called "Party Next Door: How the Young Bucks Revolutionized Professional Wrestling." And this one's done by Mike Pellucci. And one of the more interesting things that came out of this piece was the Young Bucks almost came to the WWE a year ago. They almost came with AJ Styles.
Really?
Yes.
That's curious. The Young Bucks.
Get this. Okay. They had said that, you know, when AJ and Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows left, they said if that had happened a few weeks earlier, they might have come as well. And here's the quote, okay, from Matt Jackson, one half of the Young Bucks. "When AJ was about to leave, he pulled us aside before anybody knew anything, and he asked us about our contracts. At that point, it was December, and we had just signed. We signed in November." He's like, "You did? Ugh." The idea was he was going to try to get us to walk out with him and be the guys with him. He goes, "If we never signed, there's a great chance we could have been walking out on Raw with those guys, I feel."
Wow.
And instead, the Young Bucks just recently signed lucrative deals to remain with Ring of Honor that will also allow them to work X amount of dates with New Japan and with Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. And I mean, they're making really good money between that and the amount of merchandise that they sell. And they don't have to work half as many dates as they would in WWE. Yeah. So they've got some really good deals, and good for them.
Huh.
But they almost came to the WWE along with AJ Styles.
That would have been interesting.
I would have been very curious to see how they would have been booked.
I always want somebody like the Young Bucks. I just worry that they would not be handled in the right way.
I would love to see them one day in the WWE if that's what they want to do.
Yes.
But at the same time, I wouldn't mind them seeing, when I say in the WWE, under this premise, I don't want to see them on the main roster.
Okay.
I would love to see them in NXT, because then I think they would have more freedom to do what they do right now. And I think they'd be a much better fit for NXT. And they would be a hell of an attraction for that brand.
Interesting. So I guess here's my question, Brian. So talking about a talent like the Young Bucks, who have been in TNA, have never quite made it to the big leagues in a meaningful way beyond that.
And by their choice, by the way, now, because they've had opportunities. They've just turned it down.
So does this say that we are in the era of professional wrestling where, yes, the WWE is kind of the benchmark of success, but can individuals and teams still, with the indie scene being as lively as it is, can teams still choose that as the route and be more successful in some way? Not necessarily monetarily, but find more success by doing exactly what the Young Bucks are doing.
Do you mean just teams or any kind of wrestler?
Any kind of individuals or teams.
Absolutely. I think we're in that age. Not everybody can do it. You have to have some kind of a name or gravitas with it. Look at Cody Rhodes. Mm-hmm. Cody Rhodes has left WWE. I don't know if he's making the same amount of money, but that dude is going around. He's working so many different places. He's now going to be part of the Bullet Club. He's going to be working in New Japan. He's going to be on the Tokyo Dome show coming up here in Japan in January. He's doing really well. And now he's working a ton. He even said to me he's working more dates than when he worked WWE. But that's by his choice. He has the freedom to control his schedule. He has a freedom to work a style that he wants. I'm not saying that he picks and chooses when he wins or loses, but he picks where he wants to go work. So now he's going to work for New Japan. He's going to work for Ring of Honor. And he'll probably work some other dates, maybe with like Pro Wrestling Guerrilla or maybe a couple other indie shows here and there. But he has some freedom and he's making good money off of that. There's other guys that can do that and are doing it and have proven that, yes, you can go to WWE and you have the potential to make more money there. But you can also make it on the indies if you are able to market yourself right and get over and get on the right stage.
And I guess that's really my question is, for somebody like Cody Rhodes, I tend to agree, but is that now a better option in some cases, right? Because Cody Rhodes said, to Vince McMahon, not directly, but to the whole company, basically, shove it. You're not giving me what I want, which is creative freedom. And it was tough there for a while in the 2000s. If you weren't on the main stage with WWE, you were just kind of cannon fodder. So is it now more viable for these indies, kind of like the way indie movies have kind of swollen up as a big deal now? Is it more viable for wrestlers to find success in that way, potentially better success than individuals and for their character?
I think it is in some cases. I think it's not, the difference between the two is not as wide as it once was.
Yes. Okay. I agree. I think so.
I mean, because look at the different guys that are making it and doing really well. I mean, between a lot of the talent in Ring of Honor that's working all over the place. Mm-hmm. Look at Ricochet. There's a lot of different guys. You probably have to work more dates, but like I said, you have more freedom. You can choose. You have to be smart about the way that you pick your dates. You market yourself. You sell merchandise. You have to be a guy that is not afraid to work and really put yourself out there. And then you have to perform, obviously. Colt Cabana is a great example. Look at Colt Cabana. He's a guy that went to WWE. He didn't make it there. He questioned what his future really was. And he's worked his ass off. And he's found a niche for himself. He works for so many different independent companies. He sells a lot of merchandise. He has a very successful podcast. Mm-hmm. He's got his own business. And he has found a way to make it without being in WWE.
Interesting.
You got to work for it. You got to work for it.
I mean, Cody Rhodes coming to town in a couple of weeks. He's going to be at America's Most Liked Wrestling, signing autographs, potentially fighting Matt Hardy, I guess.
There you go. Well, let's bring up one example and we'll move on. But okay, you're Drew Galloway.
Yes.
Drew Galloway has been working for TNA. I believe his contract is coming up. I don't know if he's returning or not. Let's just say that he is, okay? He has worked for TNA. He's been working for Evolve. Mm-hmm. He has been working for a bunch of different groups over in Europe. He was in WWE. He had a really good role for a little while, and then obviously it changed drastically. Yeah. And then he ended up getting let go. It's obvious he was not happy with the role that he had there, even though I think he worked hard to try to make it work. It was time for him to go. It was for both sides. Since then, he has reinvented himself. He has worked his ass off. He has become, I think he's proven that he's a fantastic worker in the ring. He's a much better talker than I think a lot of people would have given him credit for. He has reinvented himself. So should he go back to WWE? And it's a different case by each person. You never know what makes them happy. Are they at a point in their career, a point in their life where they say, I want to be in the WWE or I don't want to. But now he has that option of saying, I can continue doing what I'm doing right now if it makes me happy. Or if I want, I could talk to WWE and maybe they take him back. I think they'd be crazy not to take him back, but you know, I'm sure he's got options, and that's what you want, is to have those options.
Well, and WWE has helped their case too, right? By opening up NXT to indie talents, to ex-TNA talents, and actually acknowledging that some of these superstars have been around the world and fought for other organizations. I do like the path that some of these guys are taking. Talents like Samoa Joe, Bobby Roode, who have traveled all, AJ Styles even, who have traveled all over the world and made names for themselves. And they said, you know, the one thing I haven't done is wrestled in WWE. So I don't need to do that because I have already found enough success in my professional wrestling career that I could retire and know that I did everything. But they still have gone to the big dance with an established brand and presence. They didn't make Samoa Joe change his name. Bobby Roode is still Bobby Roode. AJ Styles came in the exact same way, because they were established. And I think that's a really neat mindset where, yes, you have guys like Kevin Owens and Finn Balor who've come through with new names and created not new personas, but new identities with this company. But established talents coming in and maybe working in NXT for a few months or a year, 2 years, but working their way into WWE like that, I think it's cool. I think that makes it a really great time to be a wrestling talent in this industry.
Let's talk about the WWE television from this week. I really liked Raw. I thought it was better than SmackDown. I think you disagree with me.
I thought SmackDown was, first off, I thought it was a really good show. Secondly, I thought it was, while Raw was solid in a way that it hasn't been in previous weeks, I thought SmackDown was a better show.
I was somewhat bored by SmackDown. I think some of that is simply because AJ Styles is still injured. Okay. So that's why they had to put off the title match with James Ellsworth, and they did the whole Ellsworth is sick kind of thing, which that guy, you know, when he's got a cold or he's got the flu,
he's got a cold.
he plays it off really well. And then they end up doing that four-way match to crown a new number one contender. And that match was fine. I didn't think it was anything great. I wasn't surprised that Dolph Ziggler won it. The tag team match that they did for number one contenders, I look at the tag teams in that, and there was only one I was really interested in. That's American Alpha, and they both got eliminated. Like, you know, midway through the match, they're both gone.
My favorite thing about it was the way they advertised this match. Whenever it came up on the screen as this battle royal to discover the number one contender, they said, "We have all the tag teams in the tag team division in this battle royal. Six teams,
six teams." It's like, give me a break, man. And then poor Zack Ryder wins the match and he hurts his knee afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, did he?
Yeah, that was a legit injury because I was sitting there going, because remember he was wincing and I was like, that dude is really hurt, and he was getting an MRI done. They haven't seen anything about it, but they feel like he might have popped his kneecap, and they don't know if there was any kind of tendon or ligament damage, so they were doing an MRI.
Is popping your kneecap bad? Is that going to be a long-term injury?
It would at least probably be a few weeks, not longer. I had a friend that did that years ago where we were playing football or doing something, and he popped his kneecap, and like his kneecap was on the side of his knee.
Ugh. Ugh. Vomit. So this is a good time to talk about last week you were all down on, oh well, why was this tag team match between the Hype Bros and who do they face again? Heath Slater and Rhino. I don't remember who they fought, but they won, right? And you're like, why does this match happen?
The Ascension,
right?
And by the way, Connor was made to be like freaking, you know, just a killer out there in this Rumble match that they did, this Battle Royal, where he's just eliminating guys left and right. I'm like, my God, they've destroyed this guy's credibility forever, and now he's just whipping everybody.
So let's take a step back here. So the show on the whole, I think, did a lot of good things. Each segment pushed forward storylines in meaningful ways. We didn't just have random guys fighting who weren't in the middle of something. We had an opening segment, which set up the main event for the night. We had two women's matches, one for the title as a rematch, one that involved this other side storyline happening with Natalya and Nikki, and Carmella. We had this.
It was Carmella and Nikki on the outside.
Yes, Nikki was watching
us. That's one of the things that really ticked me off about the show, because I am so tired of that stupid finish of getting distracted because you're looking and you're jawing with somebody, and next thing you know, you get cradled up for a pin. I'm like, please stop doing this thing, man.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think you take this show as the whole, and so that pushed forward that storyline a little bit, right? You have this tag team battle royal, which not only pushed forward a new contender for the tag team titles, it also built up from last week where Zack Ryder and Mojo Rawley got a meaningful win, which makes them look more legitimate, right? That's the one thing the Attitude Era did very well, is they had a lot of no finishes, but they also gave guys wins when they were heading into big matches to make them look more legitimate. So I thought that was a nice holdover that they won, not because I pull for them or think they're the best tag team, whatever, but because it made sense from a storyline perspective. They're hot. They're ready to fight. They're not going to win the titles, but... And so I like the pacing of this show from point A to point Z. You didn't have a whole lot of fluff, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I get your point. I mean, it shows the weakness in the overall roster, I think, when your world champion is out and what he means to that roster.
And your world champion and John Cena, right? John Cena is also a headline talent out on this brand.
And Johnny Boots and Tights is coming back in 2 weeks, which they announced. Raw, to me, there was just, I like the way that they bookend the entire show, and that they started out with the New Day talking about, hey, if we can get through this match, we're going to have the record for the longest tag team reign in WWE history. Uh-huh. And they go out there and they win this triple threat match against Sheamus and Cesaro, as well as Anderson and Gallows. And then they're partying in the back, and Stephanie gets sprayed with champagne, and she's all ticked off. And you can see where this is going. She's got revenge in her mind and her payback, and she made another match. And they had to survive another three-way, and this time it was against Reigns and Rollins and Owens and Jericho. And they survived again, and they get the record. And I like that they did that. I thought both of those matches were really good. And by the way, MVP of the week, Cesaro, on that 45-second run where he tore through everybody. Let's run through this real quick, okay? Because I've got the clip right here, okay? Cesaro gets the hot tag from Sheamus. And, I mean, you want to talk about hot. This thing was scorching hot.
Yeah.
Dude comes into the ring, clothesline, big boot, turns around, spinning crossbody or spinning elbow off the ropes, right, on the Anderson. Then here he comes with the Swiss 1-9, is on the apron, runs off, and just lands on Big E, or gives him, what's that called?
Where he hits him with the two, drops down on the feet.
He just lands right on their face.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Bronco Buster.
He just gives
him a Bronco Buster right there, lands on his feet, and immediately goes right into a big uppercut on Kofi, and then just stomps right on Gallows, jumps back up on the top rope, and comes off with a flying crossbody on the Carl Anderson. Yes. And he does this all in like a 30-second span, probably like 20 seconds. It's incredible. It's ridiculous, man. And it was so fantastic. I loved it. I loved it so much. It was one of the best segments or one of the best parts of a match I've seen in a long time. And the crowd was into it, and man,
that was a good match. That was a really good tag team match. The main event was fantastic too. Yeah, so
watching Cesaro do that, does it make you even more sad that they have not given him like a really big singles push?
Yes.
Yes. Because he's a huge talent, dude.
He is.
Entertaining. I don't understand what Vince McMahon means when Cesaro hasn't reached up and grabbed the brass ring yet. He did it right there. What more do you need?
Did you see? So they, you know, they recently did a European tour and they went to Switzerland and they had like the poster for the tour in Switzerland and had like all these superstars on it from WWE, but no Cesaro.
What? Really? I didn't know that. What?
Yeah.
The Swiss Superman was left off he of was the not Swiss on, oh, tour?
Cesaro pointed it out on Twitter.
As he should have. That's
it was ridiculous that he was not on it. Yeah.
That is
like everybody was on it but him.
Okay, really, so here's my question. Okay. And maybe it's due to the lack of rosters, lack of talent, lack of depth. But why does somebody like Luke Harper, nothing against Luke Harper, but why is he all of a sudden getting a main event push on SmackDown when Cesaro is left to mid-card fodder on Raw?
That is a very good question. And we should get Vince McMahon on the line to ask him.
I mean, Luke Harper did great in that match on SmackDown, that main event, Battle Royal, just decided number one contender for next week. He did fine. He's had some good matches in the past with Dean Ambrose, but that should be Cesaro's spot. You know, he would make so much more sense in that hole.
I mean, Luke Harper's a great talent, and I hope they continue to do more with him. But yeah, when you talk about guys that should be getting singles pushes, I mean, the guy comes to mind a little bit more, and nothing against Luke, is Cesaro. I fell for it when they talked about trading Sami Zayn.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I fell for it. And I was just like, cool, they're going to put him in the SmackDown. They're gonna find something for him. And it was all a ruse by Mick Foley to, you know, to piss off Sami, so to make sure he really wants this match with Braun Strowman that they're going to do on Sunday. And the storyline made sense. But Sami would be a better fit on SmackDown. So would Cesaro. And both of them have made mentions of that on Twitter. And Daniel Bryan has openly campaigned for them to be switched to SmackDown on Twitter as well.
Yes.
I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but you can try. A boy can dream, can't you? But, I mean, I don't know. Television was okay this week. It was nothing special. I was a little bit surprised they didn't do more to build up the Charlotte-Sasha Banks match, considering that they're talking about this is going to be the end of the feud, or at least for a long time it will be. I thought they would have done more with that, and I get the feeling, again, that's not going on last. And maybe it will, but if it's going to go on last on Sunday's pay-per-view, I think they should have promoted that and done a lot more to build it up.
Brought them out, at least. I mean, you could have at least had some kind of go-home segment, have an interview with one or both of them. It just kind of felt relegated to, here's a video package. Remember, you still care, you know?
Right. I mean, they promoted Emelina was going to be there, and then you're sitting there waiting for the show, like, nope, 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 nope. And then it's like, coming soon. It's like, she got bumped.
Yep. Weird.
It's
weird.
I mean, things like that happen. It's a little bit strange, but yeah. Okay, do you want to talk WrestleMania right now, or you want to talk Roadblock?
Well, let's talk Roadblock too, because I might change my opinion about WrestleMania depending on who we pick for Roadblock.
Okay, so let's give some predictions for Roadblock. End of the line.
End of the line.
Yeah. So
Oh wait, I'm too early. Never mind.
Yeah, you're too
end early. Of the line. Whatever the music.
We're not using that music.
Rock
by the way,
music.
So right now they only have 6 matches announced, and they're adding another one. I think it's coming to fruition off of the Tribute to the Troop show, which is tonight, which is always a great thing WWE does. But I have not read the spoilers for that. So just imagine there's going to be a tag team match added to this. So on the pre-show, they're doing Big Cass against Rusev. I want Rusev to win so bad.
I think it makes sense for Rusev to win here. I think they're going to give the win to Big Cass to make up for Enzo.
I agree. I think Big Cass is going to win.
I think what happens is you have Big Cass win, and then Enzo comes back, and that's where Rusev gets his win.
So they're doing Sami Zayn against Braun Strowman with a 10-minute time limit, which I thought that was reserved for, like, when I used to watch NWA wrestling on TBS on Saturday nights, when Tully Blanchard would defend the television title against Brad Armstrong or White Lightning Tim Horner. And these 10-minute time limit matches, so that way they could go to a draw. But yeah, I mean, They're bringing back the time limit for this match, which I'm all for. And I think what they're going to do is Braun Strowman's going to beat him up, but Sammy is going to survive the 10 minutes.
Yes. Which, I don't know. It feels like we're emphasizing Sami Zayn's small stature and inability to win because of that a little bit too much, I feel like. But I think you're right. I think that's what we're going to end up seeing is Sami Zayn survives, but he gets a beating. He gets a whooping in the process.
So they're doing a triple threat for the Cruiserweight title. Rich Swann, TJ Perkins, Brian Kendrick. Man, they have minimalized these guys so much. I am still waiting for that killer blowaway Cruiserweight match we have not gotten since the Cruiserweight Classic.
Yep. Still waiting.
Still waiting. I'm going to say Rich Swann retains the title.
I think so, too. That's makes the most sense here moving forward. I think they really shortchanged Brian Kendrick in this storyline, unless they plan on going back to him relatively soon. I'm rather disappointed.
So I think the match they're going to add is the New Day defending the tag team titles. I don't know against who. My guess would be Cesaro and Sheamus, but we shall see. Do you think New Day loses the titles now that they have the record?
Yes, and I think the announced team plays it up that, well, they had to defend it twice on Monday night, and they've been worn down, and they were partying too much. So I think you have to flip the script here a little bit. And I feel like they do have the company, WWE, does have some faith in Cesaro and Sheamus as a tag team. So I think New Day is going to lose it on Sunday.
Do you think they could do something where New Day shows up and they're like half in the bag from partying all week?
You never know. I haven't thought about that, but it is potential.
And that way they would be more apt to losing.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm going to look at the spoilers here really quick. I'm not going to give anything away. I'm going to see if they give away what that match could be. Scintillating radio.
like your.
No. Okay. There's a match on here. They do Golden Truth versus Shining Stars versus Gallows and Anderson versus Sheamus and Cesaro to determine New Day's challengers at Roadblock. I don't know who wins that, but I'm going to guess Sheamus and Cesaro.
Sheamus and Cesaro, yeah. That's my prediction.
It's the tribute to the Troop show, and almost every time the babyfaces win.
Yep.
So that would make a lot of sense. They're also doing Jericho against Rollins. That's got to be Rollins, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're doing.
Jericho doesn't think wins and losses matter, so there you go. Sure. And Rollins is building up towards a match with Triple H, potentially at Rumble, so we'll see.
Do you think we get Triple H on the show?
If Triple H were to interfere, wouldn't he have to cost Rollins this match?
He would, but I don't think Triple H is going to be on this show.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Sasha Banks, Charlotte, 30-minute Iron Man match for the women's title. As much as they played hot potato with this title, I think they're going to do it again. I think Ric Flair is going to come out in the middle of the match. He's going to act like he's there to support Sasha, and then he is going to cost Sasha the title because he feels bad and wants to support his daughter. And Charlotte will leave as the champion again.
Just to be a contrarian, and I get that's a really good booking. In fact, you have convinced me that I'm probably wrong here. But just to be a contrarian, I think Sasha Banks holds on to the championship. I think this is her moment, finally. We've been waiting for months, and she concludes this feud and takes the championship home on a big stage and a big match. I think this is it.
And then they're doing Kevin Owens against Roman Reigns. Only one of their championships is on the line, and that is the Universal Championship. Mm. Does Roman Reigns recapture a world championship?
No, he doesn't. No, that does not happen.
Gonna say no either. I'm gonna say Kevin Owens.
Yes.
Does Jericho help KO win?
See,
well, you put it like that. I'll give you a scenario.
Yeah, I know what you're gonna say. You're gonna say Jericho costs Owens the match, and we set up that
it sets up Jericho and Kevin Owens, and then Roman Reigns is your champion.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. Mm. So no. We have...
And then you know where they go from there? Where? Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman.
Oh, my Lord.
Shoot me now.
Don't you want to hear that music going for the following contest? It's for one fall and for the WWE Universal Championship.
Okay, so here's the my lord. So we're going back to like Great Khali Batista days, man. Come on now.
Is a Punjabi prison match?
Punjabi prison, yes. Yes. Okay. What if? Okay.
I can't believe I just tried to do that impression of Braun Strowman's
music. That was pretty good. You know, he's from North Carolina. He played high school at the high school that my half sister went to. Or he played football at the high school my half sister went to.
Everybody look up on YouTube of Braun Strowman in the car rapping. He's a good rapper. He was singing along to some rap song. He's really good. He's a funny dude.
Okay. Take your word for it.
Everybody loves the guy, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean
the locker room loves him.
So my question is, I guess we're talking about WrestleMania, and we only have a few pay-per-views in between now and then. So I know we're going to do Rumble is next after End of the Line. And then do we have separate brands for February, or do we just have
one? It's like there's two. Well, they're doing one in February. They're doing one in March as well. Okay. So they're doing Elimination Chamber, I believe, is SmackDown. And then I want to say, is it Fastlane for Raw?
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So they're bringing back Elimination Chamber for SmackDown there. That's cool. I like it.
Yes.
They should make that one alternate every year. But I guess because Raw had Hell in a Cell. Okay.
Okay, so I'm gonna say Roman Reigns wins the title on Sunday. That's a bold prediction right there, man. That's bold.
One bold prediction. Bringing it back.
Man, I'm going to get booed out of the building for that one.
Okay, if that's your bold prediction, if that happens, that is also my damaged angle of the week. So let's bring back some old angle. Segments here.
We'll bring them all back, man. We're available for sponsorships for all of them. We'll sponsor every freaking segment. You name it.
Oh, my lord. What do we have? We have the Cheap Pops moment of the week.
Cheap Pops Rewind. It's What Are You Watching on the Network?
WrestleMania.
Guess WrestleMania. We can do another damaged angle.
Bold prediction of the week.
Yeah, hot take, you know. Of it, man. Lord. It's all available.
God, you're the next Stephen A. Smith over there with your hot takes. And
let me tell you, Slava Medvedenko.
I guess my thing is, if you hand the title to Roman Reigns, what do you do next? I think Kevin Owens versus Jericho has to happen before WrestleMania, the way they've set it up. So it would not surprise me then to see Kevin Owens versus Jericho for the title at the Rumble.
I could see them one costing the other at the Rumble, and then they draw this out to where maybe they face each other at WrestleMania.
Okay, well, and that just seems like still three and a half months away, though.
But don't we always complain about we don't get long, juicy, laid out, substantive feuds? It depends. I mean, it's one thing if you don't wrestle all the time, and say you only wrestle like once a month during those. Like, okay, so Jericho and Shawn Michaels years ago. They didn't wrestle all the time. They interacted all the time, but they only wrestled like in the pay-per-views.
Right.
Or they didn't wrestle that often. It wasn't like every week. That one was a really good feud, and it lasted, 7 months? Yeah. It was only supposed to last one match, and it went 7 months. I mean, look at what they've done with this one. I mean, I think I've been a little bit surprised that they've already, you know, had angst between the two of them. I thought that wasn't going to come for a little while longer. But they've already gone in that direction. I think they could draw it out long enough to WrestleMania.
Okay.
But that also means Kevin Owens would not have the championship at WrestleMania, probably. Well, I mean, they could do Owens against Jericho for the title at Mania.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think they're going to put Jericho in that spot.
I don't think so either, but we'll see. I mean, they could. Okay. So.
Okay, right, let me think here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let's officially start it. Mm-hmm. Time for Guess WrestleMania. Anya, I'm bringing back that music. It's the for WrestleMania the 1 year that our good buddy Dickerman hated and made fun of WWE for. Big time Peter Gabriel, which actually was a theme for WrestleMania 1 year.
Nice.
Yeah.
Not as good as the classic.
No, but you know what? We got to be fair to all the different WrestleManias. So I'm bringing it back.
Separate but equal.
Right. So... Where are your thoughts about WrestleMania this week?
Okay. So I'm going to just put the pieces in play. Here is my stream of consciousness thought after hearing the way this is booked. Kevin Owens keeps the title, fights Jericho, loses it in November. This is tough, Ryan.
How can he lose it in November when we're already in December?
February, that other month that is in between two other months.
I know that there's the two roadblocks this year, but geez.
I mean, this one's the end of the line, though.
It is.
So I think, this is tough. What if Kevin, okay, I'm going with this.
Okay.
Kevin Owens holds on to the title until WrestleMania and defends it against Finn Balor.
Oh, you mean the scenario that I laid out last week?
Yes, I'm going back to that one.
Okay.
Like it.
I like it too. So let's go with it. Okay.
Okay.
Well, let me throw this one out too. If we really want a rumor monger, we talk about who Roman Reigns is going to face, whether he has a championship or not going into WrestleMania. Braun Strowman is out there. Could we potentially see Roman Reigns against Samoa Joe?
For the U.S. championship? Book it.
Why not, man?
Book it. Done.
By the way, I don't know if he's going to be involved in a big match at WrestleMania, but man, WWE has some big plans for Baron Corbin.
Yes.
I mean, do you see that video package that they did for him this week? I mean, they got some big plans for Baron Corbin.
Yeah, they do. So I think he's a potential Intercontinental Championship fodder. He won the Andre the Giant Battle Memorial Royal.
You said that totally backwards.
Battle Royal.
Why'd you take two on that? Yeah.
I need more alcohol. It's too early. Okay, let me just stick with that. Okay, I'm going to go with Kevin Owens versus Finn Balor for the championship. And then on the other hand, okay, let's stick with Seth Rollins, Triple H. I like that pairing. Yeah. Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns for the U.S. title. Roman Reigns versus Braun Strowman for the U.S. title. I'm going to stick with that one.
Okay.
And on the SmackDown side, John Cena wins it back and defends it against The Undertaker at WrestleMania.
I agree with that. Who is AJ Styles face?
AJ Styles fights. That's tough. The Miz?
Wow. AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe. A match we've never seen before.
I told you last week that's what you should do.
I know. Who knows? Maybe they'll do it. I'm not against it. I mean, they'll have a killer match. It's just.
Yes.
We've seen it plenty of times. We've never seen it on that stage. And if that's what it takes to have a kick-ass match and they're on the WrestleMania stage, that's awesome. Go for it. Good for them. I'm not taking anything away from them. There's still a lot of pieces that we're trying to figure out here. And I know it's December and WrestleMania is still over 3 months away, but we're getting in that range now. Mm-hmm. We're really getting there. So
I think it's exciting that we don't have it all planned out. We can't see everything yet because it's not happened.
Right.
I love the rumors, but
I mean, Goldberg against Lesnar, obviously too, but, I think it's good that there's a lot of different directions they could go that makes sense that I'm not sitting here going, oh, don't do that. You know, that there's a lot of directions where I'm saying, cool, man. I could see that. That would be a great match. That would be fun. You know, there's still a lot of different things that are available to them.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Couple last things before we get out of here. Do you think Booker T will be the mayor of Houston come 2020? He's running for mayor.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. He threw it out there on his radio show and some people were like, is he serious? And then he put out a statement on Twitter and it says, I am pleased to announce that I am running for mayor of Houston. And he actually has this 5-paragraph statement talking about how much he loves the city and, you know, coming from poverty to having troubles in his life to where he is now and how much he cares about the city. And he wants to do something. And that something is he wants to be the mayor of Houston and he wants to serve the people in that city.
Interesting. Nope. Not going to win it though. Not in Houston. Not in Houston. He's not. Nope. What about you? You think so?
Well, I don't know the politics there. I don't know what party he's running on. I don't know how well he's respected there. I don't know what some of his policies are. I don't know who he's running against. I mean, there's a lot of different factors.
Right. But when you put it in that context, he's definitely going to win. Sure. You're right.
Hey, Jerry Lawler ran for mayor of Memphis, okay? And he came in third, I believe, years ago. Maybe it was fifth. I don't know.
No, he can't. I remember that. But Memphis is a pretty big place. I have a question for you, Brian.
Well, Houston's a little bit bigger. Houston's the fourth biggest city in the country, I believe.
That's why I don't think he has any chance. He's got, wait for it, no chance in hell.
Maybe if he does it on a Whataburger platform, since Whataburger is big in Houston.
Uh-huh. Well, there you go. I have a question for you, Brian. Let's add another segment here. Let's rank the championships. So I want you to, in order of prestige, rank the current championships in WWE.
Oh, God.
Rank the championships.
Does that include the tag team titles or?
Well, I think it includes, yes, it includes both sets of tag team titles and both women's titles.
Oh, my God.
Rank the championships.
Why'd you have to bring this up to me now? I've got no planning here.
Because I'm going to throw out my ranking, if you're ready for it. Can you go first?
Go for it. Please do.
Okay. Number one, thanks to AJ Styles and his phenomenal run with the belt. Number one is the WWE Championship.
I would agree with that.
Number two, Intercontinental Championship on the Miz's however many day reunion tour. Okay.
Sure.
Number three, I think next is the WWE women's title tied with the WWE Universal title.
You can't have ties.
What?
No, no ties.
Okay, fine. I'm putting the women's title above the Universal title. Done.
Okay, I can agree with that. Because they haven't done much with KO lately.
Universal title comes next.
Yep.
Followed by the tag team titles on Raw. Followed by...
Let me ask you this, okay?
The women... Okay.
Should the tag team titles be higher considering how long the New Day have held them?
Yes. They just don't mean that much, though.
That's the thing. They should be. It's who they're facing.
Yes, exactly.
And just until recently, they've had some better competition, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the last month or so has been pretty good. But there for a while, they fought the Dudleys, but the feuds haven't meant anything. It's just felt very kind of pish-posh, you know?
Right.
So, tag team titles, followed by the women's title on SmackDown, which... I might would make a stronger argument for being above both of the tag team titles, followed by the U.S. title, followed by the tag team titles on SmackDown.
I can agree with all that. I can agree with that.
So let's see. My ranking was WWE, Intercontinental,
yeah,
Raw Women's,
mm-hmm,
Universal,
yep,
Tag Team,
Raw Tag Team.
Yeah, Raw Tag Team, Women's SmackDown.
U.S.
And no. U.S. goes at the bottom. Women's SmackDown goes above.
You had the SmackDown Tag Team.
I changed my mind. I changed.
SmackDown Tag Team was the lowest.
Right. So it goes Women's SmackDown.
Yeah. Then U.S.
Raw U.S. And then SmackDown Tag Team.
You didn't even put the Cruiserweight title in there.
Oh, yeah. It's way down there. Don't even worry about it.
Wow.
I mean, I think the light heavyweight title has a little bit more prestige.
Where would
you
put the NXT championship in this?
Ooh, I would put it. I would put it about midway down. I think you give the WWE and Intercontinental the rub.
Put it third. I think
you put it third.
Yep. Okay. Where would you put the tag team titles from NXT?
I would put it above both sets of tag team titles from.
Yeah.
From on SmackDown. Right. So I would put it below the Universal title. Well,
this is getting complicated now. Where would you put Kyle O'Reilly, the Ring of Honor champion, in this?
I would put, that made me think. Where would you put Kyle O'Reilly? Are you going to see Star Wars this weekend?
I am going to see it on Sunday. Yes. Okay,
me too. I think so. That's my day.
Where would you put Eddie Edwards, the TNA world champion, on this list?
I might put him above the Cruiserweight title.
Okay, before we get out of here, let's talk a little TNA. And I don't mean the salacious kind. So
that joke never gets old.
Never does. Yuck. So John Pollock from Live Audio Wrestling reported Anthem Sports and Entertainment, now the parent company of that is funding TNA Wrestling, has been meeting with one of the original founders of the company, Jeff Jarrett, and possibly bringing him back. Nobody knows exactly what kind of role. Would it be in a management? Would it be an on-air? Whatever. But there is some belief that he could come back. We'll figure out the relationship. He's not giving up Global Force Wrestling. He's been continuing to work on that. He's been speaking with a lot of different people and different companies and whatnot. And maybe somehow the two could work together. Or maybe you could even get to a point that TNA, since we've talked about their name possibly changing, maybe it could become Global Force Wrestling, which I think is a bit of a stretch. But we could see Jeff Jarrett once again working with TNA Wrestling.
That would be crazy, right?
Come here, slap nuts.
I love this because actually on the classic editions of Raw that I've been watching, Jeff Jarrett is doing his infamous interview with Jim Ross after he returned to the company, right? Mm-hmm. He was there as Double J, the country star.
J-E-R-R-E-T-T, what's that spelled? Double J, Jeff Jarrett?
With Road Dogg as his posse, right? He left to go to WCW. He's come back to do his shoot interview with Jim Ross, talking about how he is going to be a future world champion, and he's going to prove Vince McMahon wrong.
Have you seen him riding down to the ring on a white horse with sunglasses that light up yet?
That happened before this. That was pre Jeff Jarrett's return, because now he's back as Jeff Jarrett.
That's fantastic stuff, let me tell you.
That was Double J.
You know what some people used to call him because they weren't too fond of his work style?
Yes.
Double J Blase.
Oh, okay. I've also been incredibly bothered by the number of times that they have used derogatory terms about gay people.
My God.
It's
really, really bad. And by the way, I am not using that nickname that I threw out there for Jeff. Yeah. That is a nickname that some people call him. I'm sure.
Well, there were signs up that said stuff like Double J ain't he gay and things like that.
Oh, that's brutal.
Bring those kinds of signs in and Bret Hart talked about the H's in Triple H standing for homo and use it as an insult.
Right.
So it's really terrible. It's really, really terrible sometimes WWE said back in the day. So,
it's bad.
But it's weird. Jeff Jarrett coming back again. God, he won't stay lying down, will he?
We'll see. Okay. So we'll end on this. Okay. So we know that Kevin Owens heat magnet, right? So he was at a house show this weekend. And there was a 7-year-old kid right next to the ramp. And I guess he's wearing a Roman Reigns shirt. In fact, I'm looking at it right now. Huh? So anyway, this boy, like all night long, he's high-fiving wrestlers. They come out and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
So then Kevin Owens comes out. And Kevin Owens decides to get in it with this kid.
Okay.
And Owens tells the kid to buy his shirt. And then he says, nope, tell you what, kid, I'm changing my mind. I don't even want you to wear a Kevin Owens shirt ever. And he wouldn't high five the kid or anything like that. So he's being a heel, right?
Yes.
It's all caught on video. What's not caught on video is apparently afterwards, and his mom said this, that her son started crying after this. And by the way, Kevin Owens said, actually, don't get this shirt. I didn't want you to ever wear my shirt. Don't you ever try to touch me.
Wow.
And
okay.
So the kid got upset. I think mom started crying. I don't think the kid started crying. So she was upset.
The mom started crying?
Yeah,
what?
Because her son was...
You insulted my baby!
Her son was distraught, you know, and whatnot.
Oh,
so Kevin Owens finds out about this and then goes on a little bit of a... went on Twitter and so there's a picture of Kevin face down, like on the ramp with the title around his arm. It's like he's exhausted after a match. He's somehow survived with the title. And he's put out that picture, and then he puts like little quotes under it, right? And one of them is, a wrestler told my son not to touch him. I'm completely heartbroken. Well, not really, but if I complain, maybe I'll get free stuff. Or another one. I had a private conversation with Seth Rollins once. Here's what we talked about. Hey, can we take a picture together? Cool, thanks. Can you smile bigger, though? And it was just like these things about, hey, man, I'm playing a character. I'm supposed to be a heel. Right. You know, this is the way it goes. And I will say this. Yeah, I was a 7-year-old kid, but I wasn't mean to him. I mean, well, he was mean to him, but he didn't curse at him. He didn't yell at the kid. I think some of that is a parent's responsibility when you take a kid that young to explain, like, hey, he's having some fun with you. That's all it is.
Well, and so I guess.
I think the kid took it better than mom.
Do what?
I think the kid took it better than mom did.
Well, I was going to say, do you want Kevin Owens to break character and ruin the show? Like, we tell people that Santa Claus is real, and we don't all of a sudden, the kid says, why is the Santa Claus here in July? And we say, well, it's because I made it up, right? Like, you don't just break character here. You're right. It's the parent's responsibility. And I don't get it. If you know wrestling is fake, yep, you should be owning that shit. And shit is shoot. Shit stuff.
It happened. It happened. Oh, I'm not editing that out one bit either. Oh, it happened.
And on that note. Oh, my God. Let's just cut to the end. Hit the mute. Wow. Hit my music.
Look at you, man. Don't work blue, Wiseman. My goodness. Leave that to Walter White.
Come back later, and I'm going to give my feelings on Brian Fritz.
I know, right? So, on that note, we will wrap it up. We appreciate everybody for listening. Hey, check out the podcast I did earlier in the week with Ian Frisch. You wrote that piece for Vice Sports. Check that out. And, of course, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Rate and review us. Give us some great reviews, despite Mike's filthy mouth. But you can also find us on Stitcher, SoundCloud, we're on Google Play, and we're on the TuneIn app as well. I think people have heard that word before. It's okay.
So watch Attitude Era Wrestling. You'll hear it a whole lot.
Yeah, tell me about it, right? So thanks again to everybody for checking us out, for listening to the podcast. We appreciate it. And please support our good friends over at Suplex Apparel as well. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you next time right here, Between the Ropes.